Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure. Jason, coming up, we will talk about what Caleb and Ben Johnson had to say this week leading into the Rams game, and we'll give you a little bit of a preview of Matthew Stafford, Puka Nacua, and the rest. All that coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure. Jason, the Bears have to turn the page after one of the hardest things in the world to turn the page on, beating the Packers at home to advance in the playoffs. All they have waiting for them is a team that I know you believe is probably the best team in football.
I think the Rams are the best team in football. I think that would be the team I'd pick to win the Super Bowl this year. And they are one of four teams that's top 10 in points scored and top 10 in fewest points allowed. I would say as a starting point for this conversation, Patrick, if we're going to look at the Bears and the Rams, and I wouldn't count the Bears out against anybody. The Bears could win the Super Bowl this year. I mean, I don't know how you could doubt them at this point, but you need to understand what you're up against. And I would say everything that the Bears do well, the Rams do better. And everything that the Bears do not do well, the Rams are specifically strong at exploiting that.
They have the best passing offense in the league. They have Puka Nacua as the second leading receiver in the league in terms of yards first and catches, right? Kyren Williams, yes. I believe, is sixth in the league in rushing yards.
Correct.
That's a pretty well-rounded offense right there. And it's to your point, it's better than what the Bears are, and it's also philosophically just different. You know, the Bears like to distribute the ball to seven or eight different guys, in part out of necessity, but also because that's what Ben Johnson's offense does. Here, you are leaning into the very best players on your team all the time. And then when you talk about the Rams defense, they can play the run better than the Bears can. They play the pass, or at least they rush the passer better than the Bears can. And that's going to be a real challenge for an offensive line that's got to run Theo Benedict out there at left tackle after watching Ozzie Trapillo suffer a nasty knee injury on Saturday.
I don't know that, by the way, that Braxton Jones will be any better, but I do think it's going to be a situation at left tackle, kind of like in the baseball playoffs, where you see there is not a long leash for the starter. If it is not going well, I think that Ben Johnson will be quick to make a move. But if you look at some of the things that have given the Bears an advantage this year, coaching has been an advantage against a lot of teams. Ben Johnson has been an advantage over his counterpart. That's just not going to be the case with the Rams. Sean McVay is the best coach in the league. He has great continuity with his coordinators. Mm-hmm. His defensive coordinator, I want to say, Chris Shula, has been there for the entire tenure, the entire 9 years. If I'm not mistaken, his offensive coordinator is someone that Ben Johnson would probably love to beat, would love to hand another L to the LaFleur family.
But his special teams coordinator, I may point out, was fired last month. So he's got great continuity with two of them. Yes.
Caleb Williams has given the Bears an advantage at times. The Rams have more than an answer to that with Matthew Stafford, who is probably going to win MVP this year. There's just everything that the Bears have done well and has given them an edge over opponents. It's just not the case against the Rams. And it's going to be very difficult, I think, unless the weather is such a prevailing factor. It's going to be very difficult for the Bears to keep the Rams under 40. Now, if you hold the Rams to 35 to 40 points, maybe you can still win because the Bears have the capability. The Bears put up 38 on San Francisco a few weeks ago. I mean, the Bears scored 31 against Green Bay in a playoff game. The Bears offense is as quick trigger as anybody's, but you're probably going to have to win that way against the Rams. It's probably going to have to be winning a shootout.
Yeah. Ben Johnson talked about that Wednesday, is that he had talked to the guys about, hey, we got to play, you know, a full 60-minute game here. You know, we can't just pick it up in the fourth quarter the way the Bears have really the last 2 weeks. And in a way, it's a testament to them that they can score 31 points and look as bad as they did in the first three quarters of the win against the Packers. But You know, if they get in a 14-point hole against the Rams offense isn't going to go three and out four times in a row the way the Packers did. It's just not going to happen. And they need to prepare for the likelihood, you know, like you said, that this thing could be a shootout. And I don't think you want to get in a shootout with the Rams, but it might be your only chance. I will submit this to you real quick. It's a little off topic, but it's a little not. It occurred to me today, Jason, that, you know, for the season finale, the Bears played everybody against the Lions and the Eagles didn't. And they went to the Commanders and played their backups and lost. And at the time, you and I thought it was silly because, you know, had they become the number two seed, the Eagles could have hosted in round two rather than have to come to Chicago. But they would have hosted the Rams, right? And if that's the case, I wonder, did the Eagles make a decision that they'd rather play in Chicago than have the Rams come to Philadelphia in round two?
Man, my head is spinning. You have to answer your own question. Yeah, I had a little bit of trouble tracking all that.
If the Rams had finished as the two seed, I'm sorry, if the Eagles had finished as the two seed, they'd be playing the Rams this week. Do you think that they did the calculus and decided that that it was an easier game for them to travel to Chicago than it would be to host the Rams?
I wouldn't think so. I would not think so because the Bears really dominated them when they played in Philadelphia.
They did, but you know, the more we talk about the Rams, the more it occurs to me that we all know that they're good, but they are just so much more dangerous than almost any team out there. That, you know, I wonder whether, you know, if there was a team this year in a wide open, goofy season, I think if there was a team you'd try to sidestep, this might be the one.
Yeah, they were by far the best team in the league until just not even a month ago. I feel like maybe mid to late December, they had a couple of slips. And when I say slip, they lost in overtime at Seattle on a 2-point conversion.
Okay.
That was the slip. And then they lost to Atlanta after that. I mean,
They also lost in Carolina this year. And
that was early in the year, but yeah. I'm saying they were 11-3 at one point. Mm-hmm. And then dropped a couple of games. And one of them was if you want to call something a good loss, I would say at Seattle losing in overtime on a 2-point conversion it barely counts as a loss. So I think they are pretty dominant, even though they slipped to the 5 seed at the very end of the season. I would like their chances against any of the remaining teams. I would think that they will. If they were to beat the Bears and go on and play Seattle at Seattle in the NFC Championship game, I would imagine that the Rams would win that game. When we're talking specifically about the Rams offense and the problems that hits on for the Bears defense, the Bears do not get much of a pass rush. The Rams have an excellent offensive line. It is right there in the Pro Football Focus rankings with the Bears. The Bears do not stop the run very well. The Rams have an excellent running game, as you mentioned, with Kyren Williams. And I think this is my biggest concern. It's kind of leaping off of a little bit related to the pass rush issue, is the Bears are not right in the secondary right now. They are not right at corner. They are between the inconsistency of Nashawn Wright and Tyreek Stevenson and the injuries that are still very much a factor for Kyler Gordon and Jalen Johnson. It is going to be so hard to keep track of Puka Nacua and Devontae Adams. And if Matt Stafford is just sitting back there with time, who's better at picking apart? Who's better right now in the NFL at picking apart mistakes that you're making in the secondary or just inability to cover in the secondary?
Nobody, absolutely nobody. He's the favorite to be the MVP. Do you think
he also knows everything? He also, yeah. I worry every time you have a shaky secondary against any veteran quarterback. If Case Keenum is out there, Case Keenum knows the answers to the test. It's not necessarily, or Joe Flacco, it's not necessarily the case that they have the physical ability to hammer you for it. But those quarterbacks that have been around that long, Matt Stafford is 37. They know all the answers. They know exactly where the open guys will be. The problem becomes that they don't have the physical ability to get the ball there. That's not true with Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford very much has the answers to the test and the ability to get the ball there.
And I'll add to your list, he's not as good, obviously, as Puka or as Devontae Adams, but Colby Parkinson, their tight end, Jason, he would lead the Bears in touchdown catches if he played here. He has 8 this season. The next closest Bear has 6. So he knows the answers, and it's not always to the superstars. But he does have a banged up finger, Jason. And what is it? Is it his index finger?
Not according to him. It's he hit it on somebody's arm. It's on his throwing hand. It'll probably have to be reported on the injury report every day this week. But Sean McVay downplayed that being an issue on Monday, and Matt Stafford Monday as well, I believe, said that it's not a problem whatsoever.
It was we asked Montez Sweat about it today, about how aware of it you have to be as a pass rusher.
Aware of what?
He said of the finger.
Oh, okay.
And he said, he goes, I'm not really going out to rip anybody's finger off, honestly. Like, but it is something that I think the combination of the cold and a half decent pass rush would go a long way toward making that a little more uncomfortable. Even if it's not a quote unquote issue, it's something that he's going to feel. And the Bears just need to be more threatening rushing the passer than they've been. And to me, what's going to be really interesting is what Dennis Allen decides to do with Kyler Gordon. Now that Gordon is back and playing, I thought he played pretty well in the second half of the game, but he and Jaquan Brisker are both weapons as blitzers. And, if Matthew Stafford's greatest strength is that he knows all the answers, are you really going to test him? Do you really want to make him make a snap decision that could cost you 30 yards if he chooses right? This is a little different. Jordan Love can run away from a pass rush in a way that Matthew Stafford can't. But I think Matthew Stafford, more than anybody else in the league, can get rid of the ball smartly and on time. And I just don't know, if you're Dennis Allen, what in the world do you do here?
Your best defense is that the Bears' offense gets going right away, and this isn't a game where you're down 10 really quickly, and your defense can hold up reasonably well. I think it gets really scary against the Rams if they push you to a point of desperation.
Mm-hmm.
If they put you at a point where on offense you're not feeling good about Theo Benedett, then you have to start pivoting to desperate moves. On defense, if you can't stop them and your offense isn't punching back for every score that they have, so you're trailing and you can kind of feel, okay, this is where this game is headed. We're in trouble if we can't stop them. It pushes Dennis Allen to this point of desperation where he's going to have to make very risky moves and hope that they work. He's going to have to blitz and hope that they hit on some of those things. And you are right that is high risk, high reward.
What? Dennis Allen didn't blitz more in the second half, really, than he had in the first half. But the Bears sure as heck were desperate. And it seemed to work. Their ability, like I said, to get those 4 3 and outs, or those 4 stops in the second half was just inconceivable at halftime. We were living in a world where we just presumed the Packers were going to score on every possession. Do you think Allen learned maybe a lesson or two that maybe they should play the whole game the way they played the second half, or is that just not sustainable either?
I don't think anything you do is going to hold up for the entire game defensively against Sean McVay's offense. You better have a lot of ideas. You better have plan A through probably E when you're going against him. And the same could be said for their defense facing Ben Johnson. But if they're able to get pressure with 4, which you would think they probably would, and that, man, nothing stuck with me more from the last time they played the Rams, which was early last season, than Jared Verse. Jared Verse was like 4 or 5 games into his career at that point, and you could just see it. You could see this guy is overwhelming, and he only has gotten better.
And he was overwhelming against Braxton Jones, too. And that was one of the many times where the bull rush just really messed with him. I wonder.
Do you remember him coming out in the draft?
I do. He was
Florida State.
Very, very old. He had spent the first 4 years of his career at some small college and then finished up at Florida State. But,
yeah,
you know, he was the most productive college football defender of his class. And it was just, you know, the knock was just he was 2 years older than he should have been. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the question was, is it just because he's bigger than everyone? Is it just like an adult playing against children? And that's why he looks so good. And when he gets to the NFL, it won't be like that. I remember I think he went 16th in that draft to the Rams. And I remember thinking going into it, you know, just peek behind the curtain here. This is something that Patrick and I do every year. We look at who are the very realistic possibilities for the Bears in the first round and which pro days do we need to go to because of that. And we always go to Northwestern because it's just down the street from Patrick's house. I think he walks there. We always go to Notre Dame, same reason. It's very close and they always have a bunch of guys. But I remember that year, and that was the year, where were the Bears picking? That was Caleb and Rome.
That was the Darnell. It was the Caleb and Rome. It wasn't the Darnell right year. Yeah.
And I don't think I'd go back and not pick Romo Odunze. He's your best receiver, and you need a guy like that. But I went to Florida State's Pro Day that year because I thought this is a guy. They need a pass rush. They need a pass rusher so badly, and this guy looks awesome. And one of the red flags on him, like you said, was everybody questioned, is it just because he's 29 years old in college or whatever it is? And that was definitely not the case. He has been unbelievable. And if there's one guy on the Rams defense that you should watch Sunday on TV, it's Jared Verse.
Can we talk about what Caleb Williams said on Wednesday, Jason?
Please.
You know, he's had 3 days now to kind of watch the different memes of his throw to Romo Odunze. You know, I've already seen it on T-shirts and to kind of look around and at least appreciate how just ridiculous that throw was. Jason, you and I talked about this, I think, after the game. I don't think it registered in real time with you or I that it was a powerful thing because I at least was still operating in a world in which they were probably going to lose the game. And okay, you complete a pass on 4th and 8, down 10, big deal. But particularly in retrospect, that leaping throw has really gained a place in popular culture. You want to know what Caleb had to say about it?
Yeah. Was it 4th and 8?
4th and 8. It had been 4th and 3. And then there was a false start by Drew Dahlman, the center. Caleb, I've had a couple passes like that going left where I've ended up being in the air in that way. A few times in college and things like that and in high school, so I'm kind of used to it. That's the amount of life Caleb wanted to breathe into this story today. He was not having it. He didn't want to hype it up. It seems like he's doing his best to try to move on to the Rams. And, you know, I wrote about this in the Sun-Times today. A lot of times teams that need a furious rally in that first round of the wildcard playoffs just get absolutely stomped the following week. I think the Bears were tied for the 5th best comeback ever in the first round of the playoffs. And 4 of the other teams, everybody but the Bills in 1992, lost the following week. And 3 of the 4 lost by 2 touchdowns or more. Do you have an appreciation for Caleb trying to move past it, or would you like to have heard a little bit more?
No, I completely understand him trying to move past it, especially by the time you get to Wednesday and knowing that it only gets harder. I mean, imagine if your path from here is Rams and then at Seahawks. Those are brutal. Those are the toughest games I think you could get in the NFL this season, those two teams. I mean, there's so much stacked against them going forward, so much to deal with this week on the other side with the Rams that I completely understand. I'm sure that, you know, Ben Johnson and even Caleb Williams were, I'm sure that obviously Ben Johnson was, but I'm sure Caleb was looking through, you know, Philly and Rams stuff, you know, after that game. I bet he did that before he went to sleep after Saturday night's game.
Do you remember? And he told us how sleepy he was too after the game. He said he had to go home.
It was such a sleepy Dobbers.
Dobbers.
so sleepy. That throw, by the way, you know, I remember the first time we saw him do that in live game action, and it was the preseason game against the Bengals. It was a shot down the left side to Rome Odunze. And I remember just being really amazed by the body control to be able to do that and the upper body strength, and asking Caleb Williams, you know, how are you able to put that ball with the velocity and the accuracy that it needs? And he didn't really have an answer for that. It reminds me so much of watching basketball players. And mm-hmm. and obviously there's a clear comp being made between Caleb Williams' throw to Rome Odunze and the Michael Jordan Jumpman logo. But when you see great basketball players, like somebody like Dwayne Wade, they will drive, they will be off balance, they will be at full speed, they will get knocked off their spot by a defender, and they've got this body control that the shot itself is not wild. The shot, everything from the waist up is under control and fundamentally sound and exactly like it should be. The problem in those moments is you don't have all of the strength that your legs usually give you. And Caleb Williams has shown just this incredible ability to maintain his form from the waist up in those situations and have the upper body strength in his chest and his arms to get that throw as close to possible as the speed and accuracy that it needs. There are so many quarterbacks, good quarterbacks, that cannot make that throw because they can't get the accuracy or the strength without their legs involved in it.
I think he's got really strong legs too. And, you know, I think I joked to you that the first, or when I went to his pro day at USC, that to me, he looked like a cartoon bulldog. Like it was just, you know, he's got these big, thick, strong legs too. And, you know, just all of that. I mean, we've heard from day one, even evaluators, people around the league who don't love Caleb, sit there and go, I've never seen anything like that. You know, his ability, particularly going left to throw it. It was just remarkable.
He has not left that group, the doubters, the critics. He has not left them much land to stand on. Like if you picture those guys on an ice floe, it's melting. And with the playoff win, it's I don't think you're going to hear a lot more of anonymous coaches or other team executives raising all these issues about Caleb Williams. When you go and win a playoff game like that and throw for 360 yards, you've kind of ended the conversation. How much do you think that he cares about that? He seems very aware. I mean, he was very aware that Lil Wayne was going at him. He tweeted right back at Lil Wayne. I think he's very aware of all of the naysayers about him, and he really has indicated that about the pre-draft process too, that he really was dialed into what other people were saying. How much do you think he actually cares about shutting everybody up at this point?
I'm torn because on one hand, he has been famous since he was 16 years old, and he has been famous at a time when fame is a 24-hour job, and it's something that you can chronicle yourself if you want to on social media. I think that, I mean, this was a guy who, you know, and I say it all the time, you know, he was having dinner with Denzel Washington in college and he had his own bobblehead night at Dodger Stadium. Like, and he did that before the age of what, 21? So I don't think fame really affects him. I do think he probably uses doubts to motivate himself. I think that's different than letting it bother him. Somebody asked him today whether he was satisfied in proving the doubters wrong. Do you want to hear what he had to say?
Yeah.
That's never been a worry of mine, proving doubters wrong or anything like that. It's just a little extra motivation in that sense, but it's not for me to prove them wrong. I know who I am. And then he says some really interesting stuff that I'll paraphrase here, but he essentially says, you know, it's not every good thing needs to happen in 365 days. And I think that that's a reference to last season and the fact that at the end of last season, people who were justifiably bewildered by how bad Caleb's season had gone compared to
putting him, I think.
Yeah. Compared to expectations, particularly. I think he's sitting there and saying, I know who I am, but I'm also a work in progress. And I think that's a good way to attack that.
I think that's a little bit of a contradiction to say that this doesn't, this is not a thought at all in my mind, and then say it's a little extra motivation. And I don't know how it couldn't be motivating to him. Of course it would be if everybody thinks that you can't do it. But that second part that you mentioned is really insightful. I think that Caleb, he hasn't said it like this. He has said some things that make me think he has gone through this experience of walking into the league and thinking that he knew everything and then finding out that he didn't. I think that his rookie season, the ups and downs and the losing and the some of the struggles he had really put him in the right place for somebody like Ben Johnson. It humbled him. I have to think it humbled him. I can't speak for him because he has not said it like that. But I have to think it was humbling to see how much he didn't know and how much he needed some good quality coaching and expertise. And I think that that primed him for Ben Johnson to come in and really build him from scratch.
Yeah. I think that that was part of Ben's calculus too, in taking this job and knowing that he could work with Caleb. You know, I think you saw it even on Saturday night when Ben is handing out game balls and then Caleb decides he wants to give one to Ben. And his message to Ben was that he was life changing. And I think if you think that you have it all and you have it all figured out, you certainly don't refer to somebody who came into your life 58 days ago. What is it? Mm-hmm. You know how I like to measure.
It's coming up on about a month. It was the 19th or 20th of January. I think they hired Ben Johnson last year.
So we're almost at a full year here. And for Caleb to acknowledge in front of his teammates in an emotional way that we don't see very often, just how impactful Ben has been, I think speaks tremendously to their relationship. And, you know, if the Bears do nothing else this season, I think the fact that the two of them are in lockstep going forward is just one of the greatest pieces of news a Bears fan could have received this year.
I think when you see those post-game videos, it's important to remember this is put out by the team, whatever team it is, not just the Bears, and that everyone there knows they're on camera. But there was that moment that you just referenced with Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson that seemed totally separate from all of that for me, because he got the game ball, he said something, and then he turned around like he was done and stopped, and he just had this compulsion to go back. Like it was so genuine and like meaningful to him to say that. And you feel the importance of what they've done for him by bringing in that coach who has taken him to just a completely different level.
Yeah. And that importance doesn't change whether they win by 20 or lose by 20 on Sunday. Although it might, Bears fans might think otherwise if it is the former. Jason, we will break down the game and make our predictions later in the week. But until then, people can follow both you and I on social media. Check us out at the Sun-Times website, online. And if you have a phone, download the app. It's really good. Until then, he is Jason Leisure. I'm Pat Finley. Thanks so much for listening. We will be back again real soon.